Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
My name is Angelo Carasone, better known as Stop Back on Twitter, and primarily I spend my time trying to debunk right-wing lies that permeate our media, and there's, you know, one of the places that we do it is on Bob Carson's show.
This is Lamar Waldron, the author of Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy, those two books, the latter of which will become a movie produced and starring Leonardo DiCaprio in 2013. And you are listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio.
This is Les Leopold, the author of How to Make $1 Million an Hour. And I just want to tell you that you'll get a rich and rewarding experience by listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Greg Palast, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book, Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores. And you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it, too. I encourage you to listen.
Here on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Bob Carson, and we have a great show for you today. We have the chat room open. We have the phone lines open, 347-326-9749. We're going to have a very, very provocative discussion, as always, here on Carson's Corner with our good friend Adam Bierman. We welcome him back to the show. It's been such a long time since we had you on the show. Adam and I go back a few years. Of course, he hosts the show Breezing with Bierman on Princeton TV 30. Adam, welcome to the show.
Hi, Bob. Can you hear me?
I can hear you perfect. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. I don't know,
right,
Bob. I'm a little bit afraid. Is the NSA around? I've been following you. You're getting more followers. You have an underground audience, and you're dangerous now. You know, I'm middle class. I'm conforming. I'm afraid to be on the show. Do I have any reason to be afraid?
You do, of course. I'm afraid. We're all afraid here. This is a culture of paranoia and fear. And yeah, you know, unfortunately, we have an out of control, just about everything. An out of control government, an out of control private sector. You know, where does it end? Does anybody have a expectation of privacy anymore?
Well, no, I think it went out a long time ago. I mean, we're not going to agree on everything, though. But I've been following you. I listen to your shows. I like how you dealt with some guy called in from Tennessee a while back or something. Some crazy people. Do you carry a gun yourself, though, is what I want to ask. Do you exercise?
I wish. I want to get a gun. I mean, I'm for gun ownership. I think there's something to be said about government regulation, red tape, separating people from their, you know, getting firearms. Like, you know, there is a lot of bureaucracy, but you know, I live in a poor neighborhood. So, like, if you live in a poor neighborhood, and I could tell you, I have a registered sex offender on my street down the block from me. I'm pretty sure we have a white supremacist in my area, and we've had break-ins. And I mean, don't get me wrong, not everybody in the area is bad, but I'll tell you, I would like to own a gun. But then again, there's another side of me that's afraid, Adam. I've never even fired a gun, so like, I would be, I'm kind of conflicted.
No, I just because I follow you, and we're going to get to, I guess, some other issues. But I follow you, and you've gained more, more of a following, and also notoriety. And there are so many crazy people, and it is a more polarized electorate out there. And I think some people do feel, they're doing the right thing if they try to silence someone like you. I mean, not violently, but you got to have that in the back of your mind, I would think.
Well, you know what? You know what's a good point is we had years ago. I remember I interviewed Bev Harris of blackboxvoting.org, and she is someone that she showed how the voting machines can be rigged, how someone with an eighth grade science education can hack voting machines and change the results, and she did this on national TV, and she also exposed some corruption within Diebold, and this was a big thing, and I asked her, I said, Bev, aren't you afraid of what these people might do to you? Aren't you afraid because you've really uncovered a lot here? And she says, you know what? The very powerful that be, they don't necessarily have to hire a hitman to go after you or anybody else. They could just, influence a news article or, a web posting or this and that. And that's true on so many levels. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like who controls the media? It would be so easy for somebody to just try to discredit anybody out there that may jeopardize whatever. I mean, look at Julian Assange. There was a lot of people that said that some of the charges against him regarding I think it was child porn or something of that
nature. Who knows? He said himself. I mean, Julian Assange does seem like an odd character and weird, but he said himself. If you have the level of the media and you can print a lot of things that you start spreading innuendo like that out, say it's truth, and enough people are going to believe it.
Yeah, unfortunately. Exactly.
And child porn is bad.
Yeah, good.
No, and that stuff is really bad. And then you start thinking. I remember who said this. It's late at night for me. Who was Bush's media guru? He was at Rider
Martin
University.
Martin Fleischer.
No, the guy who pulled all the strings and everything and arranged everything for the Republican Party. Now he's on Fox News. He's a big guy. He was on Roddy. He's a big, big guy. God, I'm so bad with names right now.
Not Karl Rove?
Karl Rove. He said his job, almost to a T what you're saying, his job, as long as he could get enough Americans to think that global warming might not be true and question it, he has done his job. And you can do that. You can do that, and when you have the levels of media, you can slant the news, and it takes people who don't really care, don't have the time. You have to dig deeper to have a more informed opinion, and that's what I guess what you're trying to give. Not that I agree with everything you say, but you're right. You can be why kill someone? That's messy. You don't have to do that. You can discredit them. You can also hound them with the IRS or something else. All of a sudden things go wrong with you with your tax audit. Those things do happen, especially when you get under the eye of a big corporation that is lobbyist. Yes, that's true.
Absolutely, and it's funny that you mentioned Karl Rove and global warming and whatnot. There was just a study done. Which group, but there was a study done that says that of all the discussions on global warming that the corporate media has had, almost less than 5% of the time has it featured actual scientists, actual experts. Just like every major discussion in the corporate media, where if you're having a discussion on the economy, very few economists are actually going to be part of the discussion. Instead, it's going to be political strategists, pundits, whatnot. And some people attribute it to the laziness of the media, saying the media doesn't want to go and track people down that really are experts in this area. And some other people say that they don't want the American people informed to such an extent to make informed decisions. I think it's probably part of both. That's why I tell people to avoid the corporate media. That's you mentioned the fact that I have grown somewhat since my days at Rider University. Well, part of the reason why I would argue is because people don't want, or people are becoming mistrustful of the corporate media. They are not getting the truth less and less people now are consuming talk radio. More and more people are going to the internet, and I think this all plays a part in it.
But let's be honest, though. I mean, some truths are. I mean, people know the economy is bad. There's general truths that I think that get out there. But digging deeper, knowing where the information comes from, like you said, did this come from a lobby, a political lobbyist strategist who paid for some other scientist from some phony Heritage Foundation to talk about this on some local news talk show? You don't always know. You have to dig deeper. And unfortunately, I think a lot of the American people half don't really care. It's very provincial. It's only what's happening locally to them in their pocketbook. And the other half, unfortunately, when they go on the internet, sometimes they just go, I think, to sites that only back up their viewpoint, though. You have to really be discerning and broad eater of the facts, so to speak. And so, I don't agree with everything what you say, but you do your homework and you do present a vast array of information. And
well,
things to ponder.
That's the whole thing, is that, like, I know what you're saying is that people tend to retreat to whichever media outlet reinforces their beliefs in the world. But here's my argument to that. Like, you know, I'm a very progressive guy. Probably and more progressive than the Democratic Party, certainly. And my argument to that is, yeah, you know, I read books about labor. I read some of the authors that we featured in the promos: Les Leopold, Greg Palast, Frank Schaefer, Tom Hartman, a lot of these guys. And the reason why I read books from them is not necessarily because they share my viewpoint, is because if you live in America, I would argue that every bit of news that you get, whether you hear something, whether you see something, or whether you read something, it's going to be brought to you by one of six corporations. And so it's impossible for you to live in this country without getting issues framed, as we were talking about earlier, framed by corporations, influenced by, you know, think tanks, corporate think tanks, and slanted in such a way that, you know, some things are ruled out by default. And that's my argument. Like, I could tell you everything, every argument conservatives make about the economy. I could tell you pretty much every argument that, conservatives make about organized labor, this and that. The reason why I could tell you that is because these arguments are, I would argue, part of the corporate strategy in America to keep us divided.
Mm-hmm. So you don't think there's any so-called conservative economists out there that is ace and somewhat nonpartisan, and kudos to, say, Obamacare or something? You haven't heard one say that? I know on Fox News I have. I know on Hannity and Combs I really haven't. But any place?
No, I haven't seen a real discussion of the issues that I think have impacted our economy. And you know, Ralph Nader has famously said, "Those who control the yardsticks control the game." Well, we have all these, you know, the economic discussion, and we have the stock market, and the consumer price index, and the unemployment rate, and as our measure of how the economy is doing. But yet, there's really no mention of the quality of life in America, the social degradation. And I think that's part of the problem is that, you know, these things are ruled out by default almost.
But that's why I have to interrupt you. I disagree. I already hear all the time the middle class is stagnating. In real dollars, the American people were making less. College is not as affordable. Like, who wants to go and pay $60,000? And some of these kids are going for an extended adolescence. I mean, I do hear those kind of things. And I know. But at the same time, we're still polarized. My conservative friends, my friends in Kansas still, you know, for whatever reason, it's a generational thing. They can't, you know, pull the lever for someone else other than a Republican at this time.
Yeah.
And the Republican Party, most of it's gone into the insane asylum, in my opinion. I mean, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I was on your show, you know, going back 2 or 3 years ago, we were having this discussion about how extreme the Republican Party has gotten, and it's continued, and this is, you know, where I start to get very alarmed is that we have a Republican Party that you know, look at the National Labor Relations Board. This is just one indication of how dysfunctional the Republican Party has gotten, how extremely they've gotten. The National Labor Relations Board was created, I believe, out of the Wagner Act after the Great Depression.
Right.
And
Wagner, a major watershed movement, you know, to help organize labor, and I think helped our middle class, but yes.
Absolutely. I would argue that, too, as well. It's presided over American workers, you know, for, you know, six, 7 decades now, and I think something like 80 million American workers are under the jurisdiction of the National Labor Relations Board. For the first time in history, this board is useless. This board is irrelevant. It cannot do its job. So if you have a dispute with your company, if there's some sort of issue, worker-related issue, you can't even do anything about it. You can't get it adjudicated because this board has been inoperable. And I would argue that if you poll a majority of Republicans, they would tell you that they would favor eliminating this board.
Well, yeah, the ones who've gone over the Republican Party, I think it's been taken over by some of the kooks and the people who want to kill the New Deal. I mean, Dick Cheney basically said that in so many words. That for some reason, even though I think it's done a lot for this country, of course you can always change, you can tweak, you know, labor has to grow and they have to retrain workers, but they just think this whole thing's evil. I mean, they hate Roosevelt. I mean, that, you know, kill the beast. That's what Cheney said. He saw a chance to raise taxes, not raise taxes, to just starve, you know, the New Deal apparatus set up by Roosevelt, Social Security on up, and kill it. I don't know what he wants in replace of it. I mean, go back to the 1700s. I'm just not sure, though.
Yeah, they want a more privatized system. They want a more privatized government. They want a more, anywhere where government works well, they want to privatize it because the fact that government does work well, we all depend on government. These programs, Social Security, that you were talking about, Social Security is one of the main reasons why seniors have a relatively decent standard of living in today's economy. You look at the poverty.
Medicaid, Medicare all work pretty well. I mean, you can tweak it, though. You can raise the retirement age, stuff like that, yet they want to attack it. And yet, again, now I'm going to be agreeing with you, these people want corporate welfare for Halliburton and everything else. That's what pisses me off, and that's the ordinary citizen not seeing this con game is what I don't get. John Q. Public.
That's why I have a bumper sticker on my car that says, get corporations off of welfare, because people do not understand the extent of which the corporate welfare state is draining our country. I mean, last year alone, this government gave over $200 billion in corporate subsidies. You know how much it collected from corporate America? Only about $211 million. We have the lowest
loophole. We might have those high corporate taxes, but the loopholes. And even the economist says, let's close the loopholes, bring down the taxes on corporations, you know, and make it streamline the whole thing. And that's not what I call liberal, you know, a liberal magazine. It's ludicrous. And lobbyists, they hire bright lobbyists and lawyers to exploit these things.
Exactly. That's why we have a tax code that's over 70,000 pages. And you know, what I love about corporations and the very wealthy is they talk about how convoluted our tax code is, right? They talk about, it's so complicated and you know, we have such a high corporate tax rate. Well, who's been writing our tax code for the last 30 plus years? It's been these same corporations. And there's a huge industry, a lobbying industry you were talking about, that depends on, you know, these tax loopholes so that corporations can drive a truck through these loopholes and pay next to nothing in taxes. And then
we're agreeing again. I hate that because I'm afraid I'll be tainted by you. And somebody in a bowler hat and a black suit is going to come to my house and take me away. But anyway, we'll continue the conversation because you are dangerous. It's a dangerous
You know what? It is. But, you know, that's the whole thing is that, you know, we're broke. The United States of America is broke. No, we're not broke. We've never been broke. Corporate taxes have been cut dramatically. If you go back to the 1960s, corporations were paying, you know, probably 50-60% more in taxes than they are now. And so when
under Eisenhower, they definitely were. Yeah, I know that.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, we've had this philosophy of, you know, handing the tax code over to corporations, and what has ensued here has been just a deterioration of the quality of life. I mean, you know how much consumers spend each year just on tire maintenance? Because our roads in New Jersey, it's abominable. It's the roads are absolutely disgusting. My car, I have to take my car in, you know, to get new tires, you know, once every you know, 6 months to a year. Consumers are spending billions and billions of dollars out of their pockets maintaining their tires because our roads aren't paved. Why aren't our roads paved? Because, you know, partly because we have corporations that are paying next to nothing in taxes, and these same corporations are, you know, using the highways to distribute their products, using, you know, truckers and whatever they can to distribute their product, and it's hurting our road system.
But let's be honest, though, too. It's up to the states, and no one likes to pay tax. You know, every politician's afraid to, and now in New Jersey, we have Christie, who's courting the Tea Party. I would go for a 1 cent New Jersey state gasoline tax for our infrastructure, which is very important because we're such a small state, we're so densely populated, people get by on the roads. That is an investment, but he won't do it. Now, he doesn't have the political will even come close to that because he's getting all his money from the Tea Party because he wants to run. He's running for president as we speak, really. He's not paying much attention right now to the governor's race.
Yep.
When he talks, he's talking to the people out in Iowa and Missouri, not in New Jersey. But, you know, so I don't think it's a grand conspiracy of the corporations. It's also a lack of will of state governments because people are afraid.
Well, big state governments, by and large, get some of their revenue from the federal government, and you know the federal government since 2008 with the Wall Street collapse and you know our current tax system in place and such a high unemployment hasn't been able to give money to the states as they have in the past and so but you know and at the state level it's the same as the federal level. You know, if you look at many Republican controlled states, what is the guiding economic philosophy? Give tax breaks to corporations, you know, tax breaks to the very wealthy, and cut services. It's austerity for everybody else. So whether it's at the federal level or the state level, it's the same game being played, and you know we suffer. I want to go on to the Trayvon Martin case.
I knew
because,
this.
Yeah. Okay. What's your take on this?
Not guilty. There was a tragedy, yes. I've heard Zimmerman's side of the story. You hear somewhat what could have been Trayvon Martin's side of the story. And there was definitely a reasonable doubt. I think the prosecutor overreached in the first place. I think he's going for re-election. Corey is her name. Asking second-degree murder first. I just didn't see it. I think they came to the right conclusion. And, of course, being innocent doesn't mean he didn't do something or did. But I'm saying, based on law, even though I know it's political, you roll the dice when you get jurors, I think the jurors did an exemplary job, and I agree with the case. What I'm getting mad about now is everyone's getting away from the facts of the case, and there's a public outcry, and I'm sorry, to the leftists out there and some of the liberals who have a knee-jerk reaction, that they have to find some ways to still get this man. He's not paid his price. I think, you know, he's found not guilty, and I think it's political now. Eric Holder shouldn't have weighed in. Obama should not have weighed in. That's my feeling.
Yeah, it's very, very complicated. I think there was a lot of problems in this case. I think there was a lot of problems with how this was investigated from the get-go. And now, you know, you have these stand your ground laws in Florida where, you know, before you had the stand your ground laws, the defendant in this type of case could not justify using a defense of
lethal
bodily harm or death unless he used every, you know, reasonable means within his power to avoid using that force.
Well, we don't know. He said the only one alive from that now is Zimmerman. He said that he was knocked down. Martin was on top of him, pummeling him. Other people say, according to what Trayvon Martin, he was being followed. He was scared. He confronted Zimmerman, and some confrontation took place. We don't know exactly.
But I believe, and I didn't. I'll be honest with you. I didn't follow this trial too closely because I've been working. But from my understanding, there was a witness too that said that Trayvon and they were kind of wrestling around. There was one point where George was on top, And there was another point where Trayvon was on top. George had, you know, injuries to his nose. He had injuries to the back of his head. But
right.
You know,
even those witnesses have. I mean, I don't know all the details either, but even the witnesses have changed the story one or two times. Again, adding to you have to have there's a reasonable doubt on everything. And all we do know is that Zimmerman did have a broken nose, and his the back of his head had cuts on it. Witnesses, again, it's somewhat nebulous because we're not positive. It's not empirical evidence. It's reasonable doubt. He did have a voice analysis, depending how reputable they are, and according to a firm that's not connected to either Zimmerman or Martin, that he passed a voice stress analysis test when he. When interviewed. That's about the closest they got. I just can't see second-degree murder. I couldn't even see manslaughter.
Manslaughter is what I thought he would be convicted of because, I believe in Florida you can't claim self-defense if you initiated the event from which, you had to end the situation to defend yourself.
Right.
Like, he initiated... after the 911 operator told them, not to follow, which is, it's not against the law to not follow the 911 operator, and whatnot, but, he did it, and I just think that, look at race relations in America, and this is something that I love talking about. I really do, because...
I just don't see it, though. I mean, Zimmerman himself, his grandmother was black. He went to the prom with a black woman. This neighborhood has been a victim of mostly by black youths in hoodies.
From what I understand, there was only... Some of the break-ins, there was only one person caught, and he was a black person that was caught. But they don't know if all the break-ins and all the trouble that this neighborhood experienced were from, black people. And Zimmerman, I would argue it's the one drop rule where, his father was white. Okay, you look at some of the comments that his father's made. Look at the comments that George Zimmerman made on his MySpace page about Mexicans and what he told the 911 operator, these effing punks, they always get away with it. What he's talking about is black people. He's talking about these blacks come in my neighborhood.
I don't know, you're alleging that. You're putting words in his mouth. I don't know. Maybe there were black people because... I'm just reading right here. From January 1st to 2011 to February 26, 2012, police were called 402 times to Zimmerman's neighborhood. What it says here, there were 8 burglaries, 9 thefts, and 1 shooting. It was mixed race. There was white. It was black people, white people. It was everyone.
Yeah.
And the neighborhood itself he lived in was biracial. It was integrated. So I don't know.
The thing is that he clearly profiled this kid. And Adam, I work in loss prevention. Okay, this is my temporary job right now. I'm actually in the process of getting another job. I'm working on a doctoral degree. This is a temporary stop in the road for me. But I do loss prevention, and I catch shoplifters. And when you catch shoplifters, you have to observe behavior. Okay, you have to, know what person's what person's acting suspiciously, and know what person's not.
But mind read their body language? After a while, you get an expertise. You see the same patterns. I mean.
It depends on what your definition of profiling is. My definition, or the way I do my job, is I look for behavior. Behavior can consist of somebody, walking with a piece of merchandise to a remote part of the store. Behavior can consist of somebody selecting a television and putting in a cart and walking real fast. That's behavior. That's not based on, anything. That's not based on what the person's wearing.
What they actually did.
Exactly.
What they actually do, not
now,
how they look,
now,
how they act.
Right. Now, when you look at Trayvon, I mean, and this is something that, again, you know, we don't have we don't have video of the incident, but you know, what was Trayvon doing to elicit the attention of George Zimmerman? Was he looking around a lot?
Zimmerman said. He said it was a rainy day. This is what Zimmerman said. It was a rainy day. He didn't particularly seem to be going anywhere fast. He would stop and was looking at houses and everything. And he goes, why is he doing this on a rainy day? It just seemed like he was out for a jog or anything. And so he immediately said that looked suspicious to him.
Right.
And since there were break-ins, and again, I don't know George Zimmerman. Is he obsessed? Is he anal retentive? Does he want to be a cop at heart and he wants to play? I don't know those things. But that would look suspicious to me, I guess.
Well, I would definitely – I probably wouldn't have that mindset because if, you know, he's walking around, you got to put it in the context. If it's raining too, you know, why would somebody be most likely – And in my industry too, crimes are committed, you know, typically when it's nice outside. I don't think anybody's going to be standing outside in the rain, although it is possible. But it to me, it represents a mindset of, you know, he thought that this guy was acting guilty, and we know that he was on the way back to his father's house. He just went to 7-Eleven and bought Skittles and iced tea. And I just think that he brought a mindset. He and you listen to the family reaction. They, you know, this is part of why we have bad race relations in America, is that they believe that somehow the system is stacked up against, you know, white people. You know, Zimmerman's brother saying if Zimmerman were black, he wouldn't even be charged. Zimmerman has said the same thing essentially. You and Zimmerman's attorneys have echoed these sentiments. You have this belief that somehow the justice system is rigged against individuals, and I do consider Zimmerman white. I mean, I think he identifies himself as a white person.
I know. He said in a census he said Hispanic. I don't see this as a race crime though. Is it a tragedy? Yes. Was he out playing cop and he followed this guy? Yes. Now, who attacked who? I do not know. And it's sad that, yeah, he has a gun. If he didn't have a gun, this would not have happened. We have the Florida law, which is crazy, which the police don't even like because it leads to all these shootings that people try to get away with. They can just say, you know, what stand your ground? I felt threatened. That's why I shot him five times. I mean, there's
here's a statistic. This is absolutely amazing. That in stand your ground states, Adam, African Americans, black people who kill white people using stand your ground defense are 354% more likely. I'm sorry, white people who kill black people in stand your ground states are 354% more likely to be acquitted. And the source for that is the Mail Online. Really,
why
did
you get that law anyway? Because it's an excuse I think it could be abused. All I know, I don't have the statistics or footnotes at hand, but all the cops have said it's just an excuse. It can be abused by people who want to kill other people. You know, oh, I just felt threatened. I can finish him off. I can use it to finish off my husband who I can't stand anymore. I mean, it's not the prevalent, you know, but it gets abused.
I am in favor of the original Florida law. That before Stand Your Ground, I think Stand Your Ground was signed in 2006 in Florida, and
I know for a fact NRA was what pushed that though. Again,
yeah, ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. Yeah. So you know, which basically before Stand Your Ground, the defendant couldn't use this type of defense. He had to make every reasonable effort to get out of using force. This type of force, and
again, we didn't get vigilantes and people who just want to commit murder and try to get away with it. I mean, no one liked. Lawyers hate this. Cops hate it. Yeah, it's dumb. It was forced.
And another thing that really leads me to believe that race was involved in the outcome here is you look at some of the juror statements here. Okay, the jury pooling was an absolute disaster in this case. Sanford
blamed the prosecutor. I mean, I think the lawyers for Zimmerman did a great job, though.
Well, they put Trayvon Martin on trial, and
they did. So they should have done. I mean, they did everything they could for their client, and also I think proved there was a reasonable doubt.
Well, you had the jury. One juror called Trayvon Martin a boy of color. Prior to her being on the jury, I believe she actually referred to protesters as violent. Okay, showing some form of bias there.
Protesters are idiots, though. The ones who were breaking in California, in LA, breaking windows and lighting up.
I think this is before the trial started.
Okay.
And the judge struck words like race and profiling from this case. He mentioned the jury instructions too. It always seems that when you have a case like this, that minorities are underrepresented on the jury pool. I mean, how in the world would you have five white ladies and one Hispanic lady there?
I don't really get that one. I don't know the details, but that prosecutor did a terrible job. Don't you get like a lot of refusals too before you sit a jury? I mean, every state's different. I just don't get. I mean, again, I have to hand it to the prosecutor, but you keep on going back to. I don't see race. I don't see it. He profiled him maybe as a punk. He profiled him as someone suspicious. Maybe he was paranoid. That all could be true. I don't see it as a hate crime, and I don't even like the term. I don't want the government involved in hate crime. I mean, I don't want them to try to go into our heads. To me, that's Orwellian and what we're thinking, and I think that's what too many people are doing.
The Justice Department.
Profiling, yes. Murder, no. And I think profile more suspicion of being a criminal. That's all.
The Justice Department has. I don't think they're going to charge.
FBI would have brought charges by now, and they can't find anything.
No, they're. You know why they're not going to do it is they're going to investigate it more. They suspended the investigation. And then, with Florida, the governor, Rick Scott, appointed the special, I think, prosecutor to look into this or whatever. But they're not going to lift a finger on this because of I would argue, the racial tensions within the white community. I mean, can you imagine what would happen if the Justice Department tried to try George Zimmerman, even though the Justice Department has done this before? I mean, there's been numerous cases where the Justice Department has actually brought up charges against people for hate crimes. You know,
I hate the idea of hate crimes. I'm against that. Trying to get in my head what I was thinking, you're going to tell me. I mean, two, I don't think they have a case, and I think they know it, and it's going to be a waste of time and money. Three, I think they're being swayed, if they did, by it's being tried by the media. I mean, I'm sorry, he's not guilty. Just because he's had 300 years of black oppression, I mean, and there has been miscarriages of justice against black, I mean, it goes without saying, disenfranchised second-class citizen. It still doesn't make it right, in my opinion, to try this case again. And I don't think all the yelling and barking and all the Al Sharptons in the world and Jesse Jacksons should be able to try this in the media.
So you don't even think that he should have even been brought to trial, George Zimmerman?
I'm an amateur lawyer, okay, and I didn't bother. Yeah, from what I saw, amateur, very amateur. From what I saw, that affidavit shouldn't have made it past the judge. It's just nothing there. I mean, it's sad. Someone died. That is what's serious. Someone died. But the evidence about who attacked who, there's nothing even there to prove, within a reasonable doubt. Or again, when it works, our justice system is meant. It's better, they say, to let nine people go free who might be guilty than convict one person who's innocent. You know, and that's what it's there for. I mean, that's what reasonable doubt is. It's just not there. I don't see it. So I agree with what happened, and I think it's now being tried in the media. And then what I hate is no one sticks to the facts now. It's all about race, you know.
Well,
people use it for their own political agenda.
I think there was a lot of problems with this case, and I do think there was clearly a racial component. And you know what? At the end of the day, It's George Zimmerman. The thing that bothers me too is that George Zimmerman is going to be looked at as a hero among some in the right wing. You know, you remember a few years ago.
I mean, I don't think he wants that. His life for now is he's in trouble. He has to be.
Not going to be able to go after him. Understand your ground law. Defendants have an immunity from any type of civil action. So he's not going to be tried civilly. He's not going to be. There's a huge defense fund. There are people that are going to, you know, that have paid his legal bills. I don't think he's in that bad of a position.
Now I would not want to be George Zimmerman. It's very polarizing. Like I was saying about you, there's a lot of nutty people out there, and I don't want to give anyone ideas. But the bigger you get, the more nuts come out of the woodwork. It's so polarized now. It's just so polarized. And I'm sorry to say that Jesse Jackass, what's they call him, and Al Sharpton, I mean, they're going to use people like that are just going to try it in the media and use it for their own agenda and their own Q ratings. That's what I see there. And I don't think white people are going to riot. No, I don't know, but you know, next day you see George Zimmerman, you know, at a KKK rally, you know, speaking his case, then I'll agree with you. The guy seems like kind of like a nebbish, for lack of a better term. You know, who you know, had a lot of flaws in his personality, was kind of underdeveloped as a person. His life hadn't really been defined yet by any meaningful work or direction, and now I think it's gotten even worse.
Well, you know, you mentioned Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. I just think that basically, if it wasn't for their outrage, if it wasn't for them, you know, prompting the Sanford Police Department to do an investigation, because look, the statistics
I disagree though. Al Sharpton, we can go. There's another, and Jesse Jackson. I mean, I can get a large itinerary of cases that they pick up and then they drop once it doesn't get hot or in the media anymore. I think when they look at this, they don't care about their facts much, unless they have their bias. They are black. They grew up during Jim Crow, and especially Jackson. And they go, also, it's time for me to be in the news again. And how can you forget Al Sharpton with Tawana Brawley? Oh my God! I mean, come on.
Well,
did you read that? It's legitimate.
I'm telling you, if you read, go to Alton Maddox's website. He was the lawyer for Tawana Brawley, and there was strong evidence to suggest that there was a conspiracy in that case.
I thought that was just a bunch of crap. She went to an all-night party. She didn't want her stepfather to know, and she made up this story. And she couldn't pronounce manipulate well. She said manipulate. I don't see it. I mean, I haven't seen that website, and maybe it's true, but no. I mean, I had friends who worked for Jesse Jackson, and this is my first-hand account, who worked in his office in Washington, and they're saying a lot of what I'm just saying. Besides, you know, the guy was a potentate. He was a celebrity. The substance of day-to-day, you know, politics was not for him. That's why he didn't run for mayor of Washington. These are allegations. I'm just saying over to you on the radio. He liked the party. He liked to screw the women, and he treated people in an imperious manner. They hated him. They hated him. And you know, a lot for him is the media. No, you know, deep down, if he's right, even if he's right about this case, he would have gotten onto it anyway. Because this is it's the TV and Q ratings, and he gets more money for, you know, his bankrupt operation push. I mean, just because they're right sometimes, I just don't hold them in high regards, Sharpton or both of them. And I think they're bright people. Sharpton especially, I think, is quite bright.
I think Sharpton has really been moderate, really, on race issues recently.
What do you think he called? He knocked on Mitt Romney. I mean, as a liberal, we got to denounce on both. We can't just be silent.
There's no equivalency.
Mitt Romney's religion, you know, that we're completely biased and religious.
I didn't hear that, but you look at the rhetoric from the Romney campaign about President Obama.
And I denounce it. I denounce it when I see it. I think a moral imperative. When you know, unless I get you in the political game and you need allies, if I'm in Washington and I need that vote from Obama, that money, maybe I'll keep my mouth shut. You especially, speak usually, I think, on both sides. You'll criticize, be it left or right. And I think there's a moral imperative most of the time there. And now, admittedly, if you're in Washington, you might have political imperatives to get in the way of that. And I do. I denounce Republicans and their race baiting, and I also applaud it because I think it's going to be their demographic suicide, which is, I think, cooler heads are starting to see. You know, in a way, I loved it because they were hanging themselves. But when I see the left, I mean, I'm still mad about when Clinton with Paula Jones, when, you know, and the feminist coalition didn't speak up for Paula Jones, who was obviously pressured and sexually molested by the president. I mean, but no one says anything. Why? Because Clinton was great for women's rights. But still, you
well,
know,
Clinton was impeached. Clinton was impeached in the House, and you look at the American public. You know, by and large, I don't think they cared.
They already knew, and it was all to them. They already knew that Clinton was doing. You know, we knew the guy party. Just by, you know, yeah, they didn't care. And the Republicans, hurt themselves in the long run. But Clinton hurt the country because that kind of carjacked other issues he wanted to pursue. Unfortunately.
Well, you know, unfortunately, second terms of presidents are almost never successful. But you know, the Republican Party, I think they really hurt themselves by focusing on that scandal, and they hired Ken Starr and all of you know his. Biases against the they focus too much on trying to go after the other party, and this happened, you know, even in the 1994 midterm elections where they shut the government down, and then the Gingrich Revolution, and then what happened after that in the midterm elections, the Republicans lost big time, you know.
I agree, but I'm just saying that. And we've discussed Republican insanity, malfeasance, and lies. So I'm saying you still have to look at the Democrats, and I'm going to call, for lack of a better word, a spade a spade. That's R.C. Jackson and Sharpton. And it's just race. I'm sorry. To me, O.J. Simpson, guilty. What was it? It was payback for, you know, L.A. cop racism. That's all it was. It was a lame payback. Guilty. But at the same time, I had to accept it, you know, and he did get tried in civil court and everything.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm sorry. Two wrongs, 300 years of racial injustice still doesn't make, in my opinion, right to try Zimmerman again. It's over. They don't, and unfortunately, it might backfire against what I call myself a liberal, because it looks like, you know, the Justice Department of Civil did go after him. It's like we're not getting the result we want. We'll just keep trying it.
But how, how often does the Justice Department go after?
Not a lot, and they better not on this one, because it's really going to look bad. And even worse is, it gives those idiots on talk radio, because the hypocrisy of like Sean Hannity, who now is out trying to say, this is just so terrible and there's no justice, only because it's Zimmerman. It was the other way around. It was his Republican, buddy or something, who had been killed, who'd say, we have to try him again, and, you know, Obama's behind this, you know, these hyper-partisan
hypocrites.
Well,
they already did say that. They accused the Justice Department of basically orchestrating the protests after the verdict, which is totally untrue.
Well, that's stupid. But, you know, they give voice to them. But I'm saying they might be right, but I hate to hear them because they're such hypocrites. Because nothing Obama can do is right. I mean, if Obama sneezes, he sneezes in the wrong direction and probably infected someone. Yet then now they're saying they're fair and balanced and poor George Zimmerman. It's just ludicrous, even though I happen to agree with what they have to say about Zimmerman. Because I listen to both, you know, talk radio sides and everything.
I can't believe you listen to right-wing talk radio. I mean, haven't they proved to you that what they say is false, is not true, that they're paid shills on behalf of corporations?
I have to stop you. No, you have to listen. In the time we all have, you have a real job, I have a real job. You have to listen, unfortunately, to what the other side is hearing. So
you don't.
You know what they're thinking.
Like I said, the media is as liberal as the corporations that own it, okay? The corporate media is comprised of, you know, just that, corporations that I would argue are addicted to profit, and the way that they make a profit is to embrace basically libertarianism, low taxes, deregulation and organized war against labor. And if I don't have to listen to right-wing talk radio, all you got to do is follow the money. Who's sponsoring Sean Hannity? Who's sponsoring Laura Ingraham? Who's sponsoring these people? And you'll see that it's the same corporate think tanks, that the Chamber of Commerce, the Heritage Foundation, ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. So that tells me all I need to know about them. I don't, you know, their economic policies have been debunked, Adam.
Well, yeah,
you know,
yeah. Corporations would take the money and reinvest it. It goes offshore. They can make more money offshore. But conversely, then what about, and I watch them from time to time, you know, the so-called liberal response, CNBC and all that. What do you think of them? Do you think they, what's your take?
I don't think that, you know, like people try to draw an equivalency between Fox News and MSNBC and say, oh, look, MSNBC is the left-wing version of Fox News. And clearly, the MSNBC is a disaster now because they're trying to rely on people like Chris Hayes, who I know him, I've interviewed Chris Hayes. He's the 8 p.m. show host, and he can't host a show. He's terrible. He's horrible.
You're saying he just sucks at what he does, though.
He sucks. And what happens is Rachel Maddow has done okay in the past. Many times she's second in her time slot, but he leaves her no viewers. And she is, you know, I'm no big fan of Rachel Maddow. I think they're not really a friend of the working folk. They're not passionate. They're not outspoken. They want to try to have this artsy, intellectual, especially Chris Hayes, show. And it's just going to drop viewers. I mean, you look at Fox News. I criticize them all the time, but at least they have hosts. You know, Bill O'Reilly.
Rush Limbaugh, now when I listen to him, he seems so self-indulged and self-absorbed. He's really talking to himself. But, I think they had talent. You know, they have talent.
Yeah, they do. They do. There's no question. I'm not saying for one second that these people aren't talented. They are. And that's part of the problem. But MSNBC, you know, it's not – you can't really compare it to Fox News because – MSNBC is in less houses, okay? Fox News is free with any cable package, so MSNBC is restricted. And MSNBC is, you know, not a political operation. They don't engage in the activities that Fox News engages in. And I'm going to tell you, you know, 95% or 98% of Fox News' audience is white. Their primetime
audience is
all white, which I think speaks volumes about the product that they're putting out there. But, you know, it's just that we don't have an equivalency. If you look at...
Well, that's true, what you said. In terms of ratings and availability, MSNBC is just it's just nothing. It's like a little pinky. And Fox News is like a wing of the Republican Party in corporate media, and they're all over the place and well-financed.
Well, you know,
it's kind of like Pravda when they say fair and balanced. It's very weird when they say that. It's like when Pravda, you know, the Russian newspaper, Pravda, the truth. It's the same kind of surrealism.
You know, the another thing, too, is that you look at talk radio. As I mentioned, less people are listening to talk radio now. Only about 9% of people, I believe, from 18 to 30 or something, a young demographic, listen to talk radio. I listen to Sirius Satellite Radio because I can't get a progressive point of view on the regular radio airwaves. But, you know, someone like Rush Limbaugh or any one of these there's just no shortage of right-wing talk radio. Even if they have, you know, 2 or 3 million listeners, those listeners infect other people in their life. So that's why we have a constant framing, constant conservative framing of the issues. It's because, you know, in part because of the opinions, that the free-flowing opinions of these talk radio hosts, which I would argue are not even opinions. It's more like corporate talking points. But again, someone like Rush Limbaugh, if he's got an audience of 14 million people, then he's going to infect, you know, two, three times that amount.
That's true. And also, they are like blind faith true believers. And the only thing that I think for me, which I'm, that demographic is slowly going away, though. That's what the Republicans have to face.
Yeah. Well, that's
but
why
also,
you look at
one thing the Republicans always did, even if it was idiotic, they stayed on point and they always repeated the same thing over and over. It didn't work that well with Obama this time, but, you know, how they would slander and slime people like Kerry, the Swift boating and all that nonsense. I got to give them credit for that. They had guts. They would stand up even and just go for it and keep on saying it and saying it and saying it.
And
Democrats
and John,
don't do that much,
of. Democrats don't fight that way, and John Kerry let those attacks smear him, and he didn't respond quickly, and that ultimately hurt him in 2004. But, you know, this is, like you said, it's not going to work because demographically we're a different country. And you look at the immigration debate. You know, this is something that I think is just absolutely remarkable. I have mixed feelings about the immigration law. It's going to take a long time for people to become citizens of this country, and now the Republican Party in the House, which really controls the Republican Party, the Tea Party.
I know. There's like six or seven of those Tea Party purists, and, you know, they just want to get rid of government. I don't understand. They think government has no place in the world. It's like we're living in the 1700s. I don't get it, but yes.
Well, you know what's happening with the immigration debate now is they don't want any type of path towards citizenship. They're vehemently against. They want border enforcement, even though President Obama has really cracked down on people crossing the border. You've got a double
zero right now in the economy too. Didn't
exactly.
help. Yeah, zero.
It's net zero, and the amount of overtime being paid, the border patrol agents, the drones, this and that. There's no amount of enforcement that is going to make these people happy because ultimately they don't want people to assimilate into our society. And
but also, I also believe, and I'm not, you know, it's into conspiracy, I mean, lack of a better word, conspiracies. It's another war. It's another way to beef up defense contracts. It's crazy. Talk about you're not. They're against big government, but except they have this wet dream for the military. I mean,
no, it's not even the military. It's the military. It's corporate America in general. Because look at the agriculture bill, where the Republicans cut out food stamps, right? The $80 billion in food stamps, and what do? They don't cut spending. They increase spending. They increase the agriculture subsidies to these agriculture businesses that rely on the government. They're not subjected to the free market. So how
at all? Never have been. I mean, unfortunately, one of Africa's problems is they can't compete with American agriculture because it's subsidized because it's such powerful swing states.
It's
Ohio.
Socialism. It's socialism and to its finest degree. And the Republicans could have said, okay, you know what? We're against government spending. We're going to cut $80 billion from food stamps, and we're not going to replace it. But what do? They replace that spending with an increased amount going to the agriculture businesses, which it should eliminate them ever. This goes back to the corporate media, how, you know, the corporate media is always going to tell us, oh, the Republicans are against spending. They want to cut government spending. They're going to ignore their actions as of late when it comes to the agriculture bill.
Let's put it in perspective, too, of politics. Unfortunately, it takes a lot of money to run. Strong lobbyists for Obama, for Democrats and Republicans, and these are important swing states. They talk about cutting subsidies. It doesn't happen, though. Just like
unless
attack
it goes to the poor.
Yeah. Just like attacking, and the poor get hurt. Just like attacking, which everyone has talked about, that you have to deal with Medicaid and Social Security and COLAs, but no one wants to touch that in a fair way. You don't want to hurt older people extremely or anything.
I'll debate you on that all day long. I mean, I think that's a very almost a centrist corporate narrative that we have some sort of entitlement program. We have some sort of problems with entitlement programs.
We do that with COLAs and pensions. We do. And I'm not saying that we have to eliminate them. But tweaking has to be done. But for various reasons, political, lobbyists, social, you know, people don't want to touch these important issues. It's the hot button issues, and we have such polarization. Look at this so-called compromise, like you said, for immigration. The stuff that they have to give the Republicans to keep them happy to even look at this bill, it's incredible. Come on.
No, but politically, if if the Democrats say, okay, listen, you know, we're not going to continue to appease these extremists out there. We want a path to citizenship, and we're not going to play any games here. And because really, it doesn't matter if this bill passes or not, because the demographics, you know, you've got the states like Texas now, where it's conceivable in the next 5-10 years that Texas can become a blue state. Same thing with Arizona. So really, if I were the Democrats, I would say, okay, let these people, you know, bash immigrants. Let these people, you know, let them hire people like what was the guy's name? Jason Richwine of the Heritage Foundation, the racist who posts on white supremacist websites. And
really? I didn't know.
Yeah, he made the argument that you can rank individuals intellectually by their race. And
oh, my God. So he's the kind of guy who would probably do that, you know, back in the 1800s, who checked the bumps on your head to see if you were like, oh, God.
And Jim DeMint hired him. He hired him to write this study against immigration reform. And this is, you know, and then you look at recently Rand Paul, his staffer, the Southern Avenger. People are they see this, and they say, you know what, this party is very extreme, and I'm uncomfortable with them taking office. And there's been a lot of talk about whether or not the Republican Party is going to be a national party or just going to be a regional party.
Yeah, Rand Paul, I don't get, why doesn't Rand Paul, if he's not racist, which he says he's not, and some people say, why doesn't he fire this guy? Loyalty is one thing, but the guy stepped over the line. I mean, you can't have someone like that on your staff. I don't get it.
No,
it's like he endorses
this viewpoint. He endorses his behavior. But, you know, Rand Paul is number one in the Iowa straw poll. And so, you know, I mean, not that the Iowa straw poll gives an indication of who's going to get the nomination, but, you know, Republicans love this guy. Unfortunately, minorities, the Hispanic vote and the African American vote, which despite voter ID laws really turned out in high numbers last election, they're not going to go for this. And that gives me hope, you know, that we are a changing demographic. We have changing demographics in America, and that should, you know, hopefully, I guess, diversify the Republican Party. But I don't know.
But also, I was talking to some pollsters when I was in D.C., and I had some on my show, and they said the number one demographic that could have gone either way in this election were single women, about 35 to 49. That was the most important swing demographic. And, you know, thanks to that senator candidate in Missouri who said that, you know, rape, you know, if a woman gets raped, her body can kill the sperm. I mean, maybe from an evolutionary level, some people might say that's a quaint possibility. They went for Obama. And Obama did an amazing job micro polling and honing his message in key states to issues that affected women and men and Hispanics. And he made sure they got out to vote. I think it was an incredible job Obama did. Because that's how bad the Republicans were. Unemployment was as high as it was going. Could be. And the Republicans destroyed Romney. He had to fight like hell to get the primary, finally get it. And then he still couldn't beat Obama. He still couldn't.
No, and honestly, I knew this. Like everybody, if you look at the electoral map, if you really looked at the swing states, it would have been very difficult under any circumstance for Romney to have won that election. And he likes to blame it on Hurricane Sandy. Oh, it was Hurricane Sandy. No, the polls are pretty much etched in stone. Obama was never trailing in Ohio. Obama was up in Iowa, Nevada, New Mexico.
Florida, he killed in PA again. At the end of the day, I think you're right. And I think some Americans, said at the end of the day, I'm just not comfortable with this Republican scene. It's just too weird and extreme. I'm just not comfortable.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, you brought up women voters, and this is something that's pretty interesting now. You know, you look at what happened in North Carolina with the elimination of all the abortion clinics in Texas. This very very anti-abortion bill, you know, which outlaws abortion after 24
weeks.
Yeah,
they want to kill people. They love the electric chair. I don't get it, which doesn't always seem to work pretty well, the death penalty. But anyway, yeah, go on.
Yeah, And even Governor Christie, you know, his attack against Planned Parenthood, it's being perceived as being anti-women's health. And
it is anti-women's health. It is anti-women, and they're trying to turn back the clock. And I think it's scary, but yes, it's going to backfire. Don't forget, we've had a generation of women who've grown up with it, and I don't think people want to go back. And I think most sane, I think if Christie wasn't campaigning to be president, he would say, maybe it's not my thing, but it's settled. But now he has to get radical. He has to, you know, God, are they embarrassed that they have to bow down and cater to these extremists? I don't understand.
No, I mean, that's where all the power is. That's where the power is in this country. And it's you know, I always say that David and Charles Koch, libertarianism, right-wing extremists are running this country, because even if they lose elections, you know, the Republicans lost the last presidential election. They lost the Senate. In the House, they managed to keep a 26, 27 or something seat majority in the House,
yep,
because of gerrymandered districts and whatnot. But
sides, Democrat and Republican, unfortunately, have gerrymandered, yes.
Well, in 2010, I mean, now the Republicans lost the House by 1 million or 2 million votes last election, and still they maintained control. Because, and it goes on so many different levels, how the narrow-minded, very powerful business interests like the Koch brothers, Chamber of Commerce, and others can implement their agenda even though they lose elections. I mean, they can kill regulation. They could finance a candidate that is exclusively beholden to them, you know, under the radar. They could sue to stop something from going in place. They could hold up the president's nominees. They could make this regulatory agency, you know, incapable of doing its job. And
true. The filibuster has gotten so bad they might should get rid of it, at least for a nominee. This is all true. I can't remember names, but I've read about all these candidates in small congressional districts that they just bring out of nowhere, because, you know, they'll give you the money, they'll set up your website, they'll give you the PR machine, and they can do it. That's how rich the Koch brothers are.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really unfortunate. So, you know, even President Obama, who the media likes to depict him as this liberal president, even though President Obama is not liberal by my definition, and I can make an argument that he's been quite conservative, we're still pushing every issue. It starts at the center and moves closer and closer and closer to, you know, the exact point of view of David and Charles Koch. And that is because of money and politics. That is because we have a system, I would argue, of labor control, where workers are treated as commodities. We have a campaign finance system that is off the rails now, where, you know, corporations.
Oh, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean,
broad stroke on domestic policy, like health care, Obama, wouldn't you say more that, I mean, he did not play Congress well. He could have gotten more, you know, for health care and all that stuff. But he faced this conglomerate, and he didn't harness his power, or the power of the people, or the power of, you know, his being elected the first black president in a way that he could have gotten things more his way. He wasn't intellectually engaged, or he didn't want to do the politicking.
Well, I think what Obama did is you're talking about the health care law?
Like that. Do you think it, like, in some ways he just can't, he's not the FDR, he's not the Bill Clinton.
No,
who loves,
yeah, exactly.
And,
oh, yeah.
You know,
I think Obama,
the LBJ, who twists arms, you know.
Yeah. I think, well, I mean, you know, some of those, I mean, LBJ, I think, had a big majority, and he was able, but Obama also had a majority.
He still passed these civil rights bills. I mean, Kennedy had died, but he twisted their arms, he promised them things, you know, whatever,
yeah,
but he got it through.
Did. Lyndon Johnson's policies worked tremendously to reduce poverty. Poverty, his war on poverty, cut poverty in half among the black community. I think Obama he's more of a corporate blue dog Democrat. I think that's he ran as a progressive in the Democratic primary, and then in 2008, you know, he ran against He ran, I would argue, slightly to the right than what he did in the 2008 primary. But once he began, once he took office and he began to govern, he's governed really as a corporate Democrat, and that's reflected in his cabinet picks. That's reflected in, you know, I mean, even look at the National Labor Relations Board. One of the ladies that was appointed to the National Labor Relations Board worked for friggin' Mitt Romney. You know, you could just go down the line. He's been to the right on things like healthcare, which is very, very controversial now. The healthcare law, this was modeled after what the Heritage Foundation created, and it was.
Yeah, Romney took in Massachusetts, tried
exactly.
to implement it. Well, actually,
yeah.
they said Bob Dole. But, you know, he wanted the public. He wanted all these things, and he didn't get them. You know,
well,
I think, you know, I think that's the idea of his leadership. I think, I really do think, it's just in a feeling I get from him. He's intellectually disengaged. He doesn't like it. He thinks it's silly. I mean, maybe it is silly, but that's politics. The crap you have to put up with, the lies
yeah.
you have to, and the compromises you have to make. You know,
yeah,
I don't know.
I think you're right. I think he doesn't like it. He's tried to remain the last rational man in Washington, D.C. At least, you know, that's how he wants voters to see him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's been very, very disengaged, which is unfortunate because I would argue if you have something that you believe in, really, if you have principles you believe in, then you have to stick to those principles. And you have to fight. You have to go to the maximum amount to, you know, make sure that what's right is right. That, you know, make sure that your policies that you believe in from the bottom of your heart are enacted. But, you know, President Obama, you know, this is a guy who in 2007 said he was for a single-payer health care system.
Oh, yeah, I am too, yes. Yeah, because I think, and I believe, from what I understand, that makes the most sense. I think he knows that too. He said from Europe it's worked. It could be done. Yeah, I believe it.
And so he's just it's just been the complete opposite. I mean, and the proof is in the pudding, Adam. The overall proof of this is look at what the Congress has done. You know, since 2010, we've cut and cut and cut. We haven't invested in any type of jobs program. The Senate hasn't even passed a budget. We've done nothing to help you know, struggling homeowners in America. We've done nothing to rebuild our roads, no infrastructure spending, very little. Nothing has gotten done, and right now spending is at the lowest level it's been in a long time. We've continued to cut and cut and cut, and so that's what I was saying before, is that the powerful special interests, the Koch brothers and the business community, the people that are meeting with Antonin Scalia and Justice Thomas at these retreats, these private retreats, the Federalist Society, they
right.
are in control of everything because Washington is in a standstill right now, and ultimately, you know, they win regardless of who gets elected into office. And
well, they slow down. Well, I guess we would see as progress. They definitely do slow down. Obama wanted. He's always said the best I could get. You know, with TARP and everything, was just, you know, basically to infuse the bank with money and avoid a total collapse. He's been unable, and I think he wanted to, but the greatest tragedy, he's been unable to get people back to work and invest in jobs, which has an economic and moral imperative. And that's, you know, because it eats away at people, eats away at who can't work. And that's the tragedy, I think, that's happened with the Obama administration and these corporate interests who stopped him, who really put, you know, a blockade to him. And our political system is based on, and we don't have a dictator per se, it's based on compromise. I agree there, yes.
Yeah, and this is like the new normal now, where we have, you know, a 7.6% unemployment rate. You've got African American, the unemployment rate is probably double the national average. And you've got wealth and income highly consolidated to the point where we haven't seen numbers like this since the 1930s. And this goes back to
It's like Rockefeller. Before the Earnham, who started the income tax? Wilson, like 1880.
1913,
yeah. Yeah, something. It's It's incredible. And I might sound Pollyannish. The only thing is, America is always evolving. There's always someone inventing something new or something changing. So, with risk of, you know, sounding again Pollyannish and just saying and having faith in God, I think something is going to happen. You know, something is going to happen. But this recession has gone on much longer than it has to. Unemployment has, and that is a tragedy, and that is unneeded. And I do agree with Paul Krugman on domestically and what he said, and some of my friends who are economists basically agree too. But yeah, it's been stopped, and it's tragic. To invest in people, to retrain them, is what we need to do. You know, and
it is, and that's something that we're not doing here, and we haven't really been doing. And it's because money is shouting at our politicians out there, and money is stopping this from going forward.
What about Bernanke, though, pumping money? Do you think the Fed's doing a good job, though?
Because the Federal Reserve, are you familiar with the Zeitgeist movement?
No, I don't know. Zeitgeist?
Okay. I'm telling you. If you get a chance, look up the Zeitgeist films on Netflix. Peter Joseph, they're very, very popular documentaries, and they talk about the Federal Reserve. They talk about the market economy and everything. The Federal Reserve, by keeping interest rates low, you can't speed up an economy by keeping interest rates low because there's no demand in the economy, in part because wages have not gone up. Wages have stagnated and Americans are in debt. And so, you know, keeping the interest rates low is not going to revive the economy. It's just the whole Federal Reserve, in my opinion, I don't subscribe to the argument that inflation somehow drives down wages, because we've been printing money since 2008 like nothing. I mean, how much money did the Federal Reserve print bailing out all the banks?
A lot. And Bernanke's getting for that, though, actually. He said, you know, keeping the spigot open and keeping, yeah, inflation down and interest rates low.
Yeah, but in inflation, I mean, if you go by the consumer price index, which many people argue is flawed, inflation hasn't gone up. The value of the currency, right? But the prices have gone up of goods and services, and that I would argue is related to oil prices. You know, as oil prices go up, everything else is going to go up in between. And while prices and goods and services are going up, corporate profits are going up too. So, you know, like there's a relationship between, you know, prices going up for goods and services and corporate profits going up. I mean, you just look at the healthcare industry, you know, where everybody likes to talk about how healthcare costs have soared over the last 10 years. So is corporate profits in the healthcare industry. Look at the financial industry or the college student loans.
That's a tragedy, and that's stupid. Yeah, we can talk about that for another hour, too. It's why you go to college. If you want to extend your – if you don't know what you want to do and you want to extend your adolescence, you shouldn't go to college now for $40,000 a year on someone's – it's just stupid.
Well, you're talking to someone that once I finish my next college degree, I'll have over $100,000 in debt. And the thing is that when people are in debt, they submit to employment, and you've got a very, very loose labor market out there. And so as a result, people will work any type of job they can, and they'll never be able to repay their debt. And it's all government guaranteed anyway, as far as I understand. So it's like, you know, that's just another area of, and the Congress couldn't even keep the student loan rates down.
It's insanity. Why don't Republicans catch hell with that in Kansas, especially if you're a young student?
Well, I don't know why anybody between the ages of 18 and 29 would vote for the Republican Party, unless it's you know, a wedge issue, unless it comes down to gays, gods, guns, and abortion. I just don't know.
What about you? $100,000. And I mean, I don't want to. I'm not against education by any means, but was the education given to you such a quality to equip you or your mind to be successful if you can get into the area you want to get into? I mean,
No.
Or is it just have a degree? I don't know.
It's well, I mean, the thing about it is these universities do nothing to help their students get jobs. And this is something that, you know, the Obama administration, to a certain extent, has gone after these universities, because what they say is, you know, you'll take hundreds of thousands of dollars, you'll charge students, you know, $30,000-$40,000 a semester, and when that student graduates, you just basically say, okay, that's it, you know, you can't find the job, so what? So the Obama administration, I think, has threatened to withhold funds going to these universities because they're not doing anything to help their students find jobs, and that's part of the problem. You
and
know?
Also, I mean, I don't know, but why has it risen so much? Is it because of infrastructure? College, private, even private school, it's gone up so much so quickly.
The reason why I would argue is because during the Reagan administration, when you applied for financial aid, the government would cover most of the cost of tuition. It was basically, you know, you had, you know, something like 80% of the tuition was covered. Now, you know, since we've privatized these colleges, we've put the banks in charge of a lot of the student loans now. Now you're seeing just, you know, banking profits go through the roof and tuition just go out of control, because now it's, you know, when you put the profit motive and I would argue that it's largely in part because of the profit motive. You put the profit motive at the center of things, and then, you know, costs are inevitably going to go up. You know?
Right. Hopefully, I know that some university presidents and in Congress, some people want to start very low cost online, as opposed to Phoenix or Strayer University and stuff, which their record of people actually graduating and getting jobs is quite low. I think Strayer University, especially, it's a cash cow, though. Where are you getting your doctorate from, if I can ask?
Argosy University is—they're an online school, and they have brick and mortar campuses all across America. I got to go to Washington D.C. for my residency, actually. But you know, the reason why I'm going for—I just graduated with a master's, and the reason why I'm trying to get as much education as I can is because theoretically, that should increase my earning potential. Someone that has a doctoral degree, and you have a master's, Adam.
Right.
So you know you're very highly educated as well. Theoretically, on paper, because of that, and experience is all relative, but theoretically, you should be making X, Y, and Z in accordance with your education.
Right. There's a median average I should be making a year. Yes.
Yeah, but I don't know if I'm making far below that, but I want to give myself a chance to make that money. But you know, it's very, very difficult because, again, there are not a lot of jobs out there, and I would argue that it's only a matter of time before the economy collapses again. Wall Street, the derivatives market is, you know, the world GDP is $65 trillion, and the derivatives market is something like $800-900 trillion. So you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out that eventually that's going to collapse. Nothing can grow infinitely.
Yeah, the only difference between me and you, I graduated in the 80s, and I have no debt. Also, my dad. I was able to pay for graduate school mostly by myself. That's all. I could work a job. I lived at home and help pay for most of my graduate school. That's how affordable it was. I mean, I had to hustle a little bit. But you're left, what's it, penuria, they call it in the Bible or something? You're left with just a boulder on your back. It seems overwhelming. It always easy to feel pain for someone else suffering, but you're the one still suffering. That's just too much.
I know what I'm doing. Part of it is a self-esteem issue too. You know, if only about 2% of the population has a doctoral degree. So it's like, in a sense, I'm feeding my own ego. But
right. You're in the elite, top 2%. You are a 2%er then.
David Koch says that if you make $34,000, then you're in the top 1% of the world population. So
in New Jersey, you might as well be living in a shack. But yeah, whatever. It's all relative.
Yeah, I am living, but yeah, it's You know, so I guess if you have some and not a lot of Americans have master's degrees. I mean, you're probably talking like, you know, probably less than 5% of Americans have master's degrees.
I guess I forget. I do live in the Northeast. I live in a town, Princeton, which I call. I didn't really realize until I left Princeton, I grew up here and I'm back home, how diverse it is and how highly educated it is. You know, I did have kind of a skewed feeling. And it was weird to meet people, go to towns where no one went to college, you know, and stuff. So,
Adam, let's talk about, we got about 5 minutes left. Let's talk, what's going on with your show?
We're on hiatus. I'll be coming back in September. I'm going to be interviewing, coming up, the Democratic, it looks like the Democratic candidate for governor, Senator Barbara Bruno against
Chris
Christie. Yeah, that's coming up. Those are the big interviews coming up. And I wanted to talk about the NSA. It's too bad. But anyway, maybe another time. What's going on there and your feelings on that?
Yeah, I when this came out, I really went to town on this. And I spoke at length about Booz Allen Hamilton and, you know, what happened, that the privatization, for example, I think like 22% of the defense industry is made up of private contractors, and yet they account for like half of the costs. And, you know, this goes back to government spending, is that we tolerated in the defense industry, you know, inflated contracts.
After 9/11, the spigot opened, and the oversight was lacking.
Yeah, and I want the government back in control of our national security. I want someone who, you know, has signed an oath to protect this country, to put in, you know, 30, 40 years and then retire, as opposed to someone like Edward Snowden, who was making, you know, $120,000 a year with a GED, working for a private company, essentially milking the government, you know?
Yeah, he was doing pretty well for himself. Do you see him as a hero, a martyr, in between? What do you see?
No, I don't, because, you know, if you want to compare him to Daniel Ellsberg, you know, Daniel Ellsberg, he didn't leave the country, you know, start meeting with foreign governments. Daniel Ellsberg, when he was working for the Rand Corporation, I believe, released the documents, exposed what our government was lying to us about Vietnam. And ultimately, I think he led to change. I think he bettered this country. This guy, Edward Snowden, I don't like the fact that he leaves this country. And, you know, we can argue about the merits of these government programs, but here's the thing. Most Americans don't care. I'll be honest with you. There have been polling out there that they said if the government is doing this to try to fight terrorism, do you have a problem with this? And 70% of the population says, no, we don't care.
It depends how phrase the question, though. They said, if this results in should we, overreaching and too much exposure of your own private life, would you care? It might be a little different. My only problem with it is if it's too overreaching for no good reason into privacy, and two, the cost, and three, you still have to have some kind of oversight, some kind. You can't start getting into secret courts. That's just too dangerous. Even though I'm all for the NSA, and I'm sure that they've done a lot of good things we don't even know about, but they need some oversight. Who said Socrates or whatever? Who's going to guard the guards and everything? But that's my feeling. Quickly, I know we have 2 minutes.
Well, you're right. The NSA is basically a black box budget, and so, you know,
boxes within the black boxes. It gets crazy.
Yeah. And then you've got the Carlyle Group, which owns Booz Hamilton, and you know, you can look back at someone like Frank Carlucci, who was Reagan's defense secretary.
Yeah.
It comes right from the private industry. This is what I'm saying, is that there's no separation between the private industry and government, and there needs to be, you know, because, look, the government is not perfect, and we all can agree on that, but ultimately the government is accountable to you and I. This Booz Allen Hamilton, they're not accountable to you and I. You can't get we've got 90 seconds.
I'm sorry. Well, I hope I hope this went well. I feel that we just had a nice chat. Thank you for the time. And again, I hope I didn't babble, mispronounce too many words, and I'll let you sign off.
Well, give people your Facebook page and how they could follow you.
Facebook.com/breezingwithbierman. I'm on YouTube, Breezing with Bierman. I've done a lot of interviews, Cornel West, Howard Dean, Senator Bono's coming up. And I want to thank you again, Bob Carson, for letting me ramble. I hope I was coherent.
You kicked my ass earlier about the race debates, man. You definitely,
I love
me,
you.
But that's good.
And please come on my show again. I'll communicate with you afterwards. But I know
absolutely,
you got to go.
Brother. Thanks a lot, okay. Adam. Take care.
Peace.
All right, that was Adam Bierman, host of Breezing with Bierman here on Carson's Corner. You could friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.